So from the record of Linji, you just need to use these favorable circumstances to put an end to your past karma. Put on your robe as a free person. When it is necessary to walk, walk. When it is necessary to sit, sit. Do not for a moment yearn for Buddhahood. That's the translation by Thich Nhat Hanh, and then a translation by Burton Watson. It says, just get so you can follow along with circumstances and use up your old karma. When the time comes to do so, put on your clothes. If you want to walk, walk. If you want to sit, sit. But never for a moment set your mind on seeking Buddhahood. So I was caught, have been, as we have been doing this reading of the record of Linji throughout the first week of our coming and going retreat, by this lovely sentence, this lovely translation by Thich Nhat Hanh of Linji. Put on your robe as a free person. Such a lovely invitation to put on the clothes of a free person. And our path of Zen is a path of freedom, a path of liberation. And of course the question arises, what does it mean to be a free person? And I think this has been our exploration and is our exploration here. How do we become free? What does it mean to be free? We are indeed pursuing Linji's true person of no rank, or true person of no position. So this morning here at the temple, a lovely rainy day, not as cold as it's been, and we can hear the rain dripping from the gutters, hearing the cars go by on the wet street. And all of us safely in this warm and bright room. All of us here in this silence, here in the fullness of our life. And this free person, to me, is the one who is free to use these present circumstances. Thich Nhat Hanh, in his wonderful way, just calls them favorable circumstances. You just need to use these favorable circumstances to put an end to your past karma. And I think he's not talking about just the days when the sun is shining. But his perspective, and I think one of the deep perspectives of Buddhism, is that all karma is favorable. And karma being the accumulation of causes and conditions. Everything that has ever happened to you has led you here. and at this moment, the arising of thought and sensation is all conditioned. And we can look back at our life and say, I wish this, or I wish that. But this teaching of Buddhism is that everything has been necessary and everything is present here. And that if we wait for conditions that are more to our liking, we are lost in this world of seeking comfort. So in our practice, we explore the possibility that there may be something more important than comfort. There may be something more precious than comfort. And this more precious thing is our life itself. So these favorable circumstances, this that is happening right now. The other translation, he turns it slightly different, and he talks about accepting what is here. So meeting what is here. And that our freedom comes not from the realm of control. This is not the freedom to make up our life, not the freedom to have the world be exactly as we want it, but the freedom to appreciate this world as it is. And the expression of our freedom in Zen is not some fancy power. It's not seeing into the future. It's not being calm all the time. But the expression of our great Zen freedom is to walk when it's time to walk and sit when it's time to sit. This is a radical notion of freedom. This is the freedom that is the freedom inherent in every moment and actually expressed in every moment. Of course, there are times when we feel utterly constrained. Times when we were speaking of yesterday, Derek used this wonderful expression of the time when your blood boils, something happens, and the great reactivity arises, and we object mightily. It should not be this way. You should not be this way. I should not be this way. In the arising of the objection is the opportunity. This reactivity of human beings is simply our nature. We, of course, all of us in at times wish it were otherwise. I wish I didn't get so, then fill in the blank, I wish I didn't get so lost. I wish I didn't get so angry or resentful. I wish I didn't wish it were otherwise. But at every moment there is this this wonderful call and response. The sound of the raindrops met perfectly in our hearing. And this sound of the raindrops is the teaching of the Dharma. The fullness of our life, this effortless functioning, this wonderful functioning. This self and the world together. From ordinary mind, we say subject and object. I hear the subject, I hear the rain, the object. And we imagine there is some I inside, someone, some little person running around in our brain who hears things. But as we look closer into the experience of hearing, is the rain outside you or inside you? And can you find the one who is doing this hearing? There certainly is hearing. All of us have the great blessing of having hearing good enough to receive these words, hearing to hear the sound of the dripping, the splashing. And Linji is saying, in this activity of hearing, this is none other than a Buddha nature. This is the great freedom that functions without even trying. We can certainly turn our attention toward hearing, toward listening, but we cannot make listening happen. It is just there, and when we, in the ears, we call this great liveliness hearing. In one of our readings from Hungjer, he says, the subtlety of seeing and hearing transcends mere colors and sounds. The subtlety of hearing and seeing transcends mere colors and sounds. So we say, oh yeah, well, it's just the sound of the rain. But as we move closer, as we allow ourselves to be with what is here, we can perhaps get a whiff of something that we are part of. These six senses, Linji said, are the marks of a Buddha. These six senses coming and going, this person of no fixed position, this activity of the Buddha. Has no fixed form. And so whatever we encounter, we say, is our life itself. This subject-object, this self and other, both we can talk about them as separately, and for our sanity and for to move in this world, so important to perceive Yes, there is the rain, and there I am in here. But on this deeper level, there is call and response. There is the aliveness of the ear. Ear mind, rain mind, manifesting. So this freedom, putting on the robe of freedom, is entering into this moment. Entering into this moment is accepting whatever is here. No need to figure out the story of where it came from. No need to figure out whose fault it is. But can we meet the arising? Sometimes this arising so soft and gentle and barely perceptible, and other times our blood boils. Takes our breath away. And here in our training period, we get to practice. Such a gift to encounter the Dharma. Such a rare and precious gift, and such a gift for each one of us sitting here. Listening to these words, the very one who is listening is the Buddha. Buddha hears Buddha. The rain preaches the Dharma. This freedom of sitting and walking, moving through our life with the confidence that this moment is exactly what we need. And also with the confidence that if we turn toward this moment again and again, if we do our best, even though we don't know what we're doing, and sometimes we're so confused we can't remember what this was all about. Even though sometimes we are so discouraged, we are sure it will never be possible for us. But this practice is a path. It's not a path in the sense of a clear path ahead of us, but there is a path with each step that you make. The path of your life. And with each step you find the ground, the great gravity of the universe. One teacher says that gravity is actually another name for love. That everything in the universe is attracted to everything else. And with each step, this fragile blue green earth is loving us, calling us home. And that the promise, this teaching, is that if we continue to walk into our life, we will be met, and that it is possible to grow in love and understanding. Though there is no accumulation and nothing to accumulate, and though there is nothing that you lack in this moment, It does require great effort and great courage to be ourselves. We are so sure that we are not enough, that this could not be it. But yet each one of us here has enough faith that we are willing to sit maybe one more period. Maybe I'll leave tonight. but I'll stay till tonight. We'll see how it goes. Well, maybe till tomorrow morning. and this is the Nirmanakaya faith, getting your butt on the chair, butt on the cushion. I may not be able to do much else, but I am willing to be here. I am willing to die here on my chair. I am willing to live here on my chair. A wonderful and courageous thing. And little by little, the transcendent melts us. God cooks us in her great stew pot. The great Tenzo of the universe stirs us, turns up the heat sometimes. And we are all surely being tenderized. No need to doubt this, no need to check. But faith in this activity, nowhere to go, and this this curing, this melting down, this opening, being opened bit by bit, not something we can do, but something that requires our participation. So we express our great freedom in sitting still, breathing in and out, and listening to the sound of the rain. Thank you. So please sit comfortably, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue.
Something to like point to, like, am I getting enough sleep? Did I eat well? Like, am I having enough water? And like start going into all these different just sections of it. And I love the idea of just being able to accept that, just being able to accept the arising of what I'm feeling in that moment, and that just being what, you know, what has to be done, or the recommended advice. And, so that was really great. And also this willing to die on my cushion. Whoa. It's, you know, it couldn't be more true, though, you know, as powerful as that is, but I think that's pretty powerful. That was just a, yeah.
Well, I think to notice, so for the bathroom first, and then death.
That's pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah, that's right, really. There it is. The Zen life. True life of freedom. But to actually notice what's arising in the moment, right? And to notice how the mind wants it to be some other way, looks for the cause, you know, let me fix this. You know, God, I just got a great little Dharma talk and here I am, you know, what's wrong with me? But it's such a radical thing even to entertain the possibility that where we are it could be enough. So that when we're discouraged and not a lot of energy, then we clean the bathroom as the discouraged Buddha who's just doing what he has to do. And that if we can find our way into that and just meet the discouragement and the tiredness, then there's no problem. Oh, tired and discouraged. Yeah. And Melissa will talk about that.
Actually, Derek has something.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, I've noticed over time that, you know, I've been at odds with, you know, how I feel. You know, not wanting to be tired, you know, not wanting to feel energy, and, you know, not wanting to feel discouraged or, you know, confused or upset or whatever. But, yeah, the freedom comes in being tired, you know? It's really paradoxical. But it's, I don't know, when you open to it, it doesn't overwhelm you. Influence, you know, your thinking or actions, or you're just tired. I wish I wasn't tired, but I am, so that's what I have.
Yeah.
And the resistance to reality is exhausting. The fighting reality all the time. And I feel like we're forming an intention. I think you were talking about, and both of you were talking about, forming an intention to receive however life happens to be showing up.
Yeah.
So if it's showing up as discouragement, then we receive that. And if it's showing up as great awakening and everything's so cool, then we receive that. And it's a completely impartial receiving. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what shape the receiving's taking. And then there's layers of it, because then we have to receive the incapacity to receive. Mm-hmm. You know, it just keeps going. And it's at some point we go, oh, right, this. and that's the connection, of course, to that radical thing that David said about willing to die on the cushion.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody in this room is going to die. Hopefully not during this coming and going session. That would be interesting. People would talk about that for centuries, I think, if that happened. But at any point, this could be our last breath. So what are we wasting our time for? Can we just really receive even that breath? It's like practicing. And we don't want to think that way, and then can we receive that, not wanting to think about it? And on it goes. Sounds easy, but boy, it's not, right? It's very, very challenging.
I was going to say, this challenging aspect to receiving the resistance to receiving, and some, you know, things can be incredibly difficult to receive, and all I can notice is my resistance to it, and sometimes I actually have to grieve the loss of the story that I have. I see it clearly as a story, but it's so hard to let it go. And if I can open my heart in that way of really feeling sad that I have to let it go, it actually helps a lot. So instead of it just, it is an emotional process for me with something big, not with every time I'm tired, which would be constant. Yeah.
But you know, during these 25 minutes of sitting in zazen, this is where we get to practice this. Because if grief arises and we're sitting, we just receive it. If tiredness arises, we just receive it. When the bell rings and we stand up and we do walking meditation, things become a lot more complicated. We don't have to receive having a full bladder. We don't have to receive being hungry or thirsty. We can receive it and then act on it. You know. So, but I think the zazen is so powerful. That's why all these texts keep saying how powerful zazen is. It's because it's this framed opportunity to just be with life as it is, at least for 25 minutes. It's not a lot to ask, although sometimes it seems like it's a lot to ask. It just seems so much when pain is arising, emotional pain or physical pain.
And I guess there's also for me like kind of a permission to experience it in an emotional way. And that sometimes there's no substitute for the grief. Like, one must go through that. You can't go around it.
I do think that is required. You know, there are many kinds of dying, but part of the cost of entering into the moment is letting go of what we had, of our opinion. And it's a huge cost. I mean, and for me too, I think for all of us, it's an emotional practice, and it's not wrong, and it's not like, well, I should just let go of that, what's wrong with me? But these precious things we've held on to, these precious ideas about ourselves, I am this way, you know? And sometimes it's, I am a nice person. And then if I'm really honest, I have to admit, not all the time, right? And I have to grieve that person I thought I was. And similarly, we can hold on to the notion, I cannot do it. And almost have to grieve the, well, if I'm not the person who can't do it, then who am I?
Actually, I'm wondering, maybe every sentence that arises in the mind that says, I am, needs to be grieved ultimately.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the death we're talking about.
Right.
Whether it's I am nice or I am a total fuck up.
Right.
Or everything in between.
In the second translation you were reading, there was this phrase that, I'm not sure if I heard it right, something about you can use your past karma.
Yeah, he said, just get so you can follow along with circumstances and use up your old karma.
Yeah, I like this, use up your old karma. It relates to me to also what I hear sometimes, that just wear it down, or kind of just, and the image of wearing down your shoes, or just wear it until it's used, and then it kind of dissolves on its own.
Right, yeah. And the receiving, then, that Melissa was talking about, then all of the circumstance we follow along, and whatever thing has been gripping will of its own be worn down. And I love what you're saying, because it also happens in its own time. It doesn't happen in our time.
And that's an important distinction, you know, to form the intention to receive is very different from that wearing down, which just happens. That we don't wear our shoes down, we just walk. The earth interacts with the shoes. That's what happens in sitting practice too. Things just wear away. But we don't have to drop them or get rid of them or let them go. They just let go. We don't have to let them go. Throw them away. Right? Drop them. They'll just drop.
But still, we need to have an intention to be present for that.
Yeah.
To receive.
Yeah. Receive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Yeah, Carol.
I just like that, that question again, because I was thinking as you were talking, how, you know, you have different pairs of shoes as you go through your life, but as you're wearing down the shoe may be completely worn down and dissolved, but you're not prepared to receive that. Mm. So you don't, you keep... behaving as though you're still wearing that same shoes that you had when you were 5 years old. So you're still walking along as though you're still in those shoes, but that karma's dissolved.
That's right.
And if you're not ready to receive that, I guess as Diane said, if you're not ready to grieve and receive that, well, you can just keep repeating these old habits over and over and
I think you're right.
That's really well said. I mean, that might be the definition of delusion.
Right, the shoes are already worn. There is no karma, right?
We're just... and we keep pulling it back in, you know, these little scraps.
Yeah.
Rumi talks about that. You keep sewing together the torn rags of yourself. You know, and he says, you've got to stop this seamstress work. That's wonderful.
Yeah, Steve.
I was struck by this, you know, this image of, you know, putting on the clothes of a free person, you know, okay. and perhaps in that, an implication that, we're holding things in a little different way, and like, oh, so, you know, what if I were a free person, you know, and I'm putting on this robe of being a free person? Well, what would that mean? You know, I have all these fantasies about, you know, being a free person, and I can do whatever I want, and I, you know, what came up for me was about resistance, like Diane was saying. You know, and throughout the talk, the words that that Josh Bartok often says about, you know, the freedom to be bound, you know, that we're bound,
right?
You
know,
and what a wonderful freedom that is, actually. You know, that sometimes we have no alternative to being in a situation that is, you know, is horribly painful, and we wish so desperately, you know, that things could be otherwise for ourselves or for others, you know, and that there's actually no problem that I'm struggling against the situation. You know, I get this image of, you know, being tied tightly with these ropes, and I just, you know, it hurts, and I want to escape. You know, and it's a funny kind of acceptance. You know, that it's that even the struggle and the resistance, you know, just, you know, being free to be with that, and you know, it's hard to talk about, because you say, well, you know, so I'm not thinking that it should be otherwise, but even thinking that it should be otherwise is included, you know, just this,
right.
This but a certain kind of giving up, like you were, you know, there's this surrender, this dying to the idea that it could be otherwise,
right.
You know, this is what it is,
right.
In this moment, you know.
Yeah.
It may not look at all favorable, you know, but it's the karma that we actually have to work with.
Right.
You know? And so in that sense, it's favorable, because is. We're alive.
Because it is, right?
Right. Yeah. This is what we have, and we can use it. We can, you know, however bad it smells, you know, this is what we have to work with, and we can make use of it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what David said, all karma is favorable. And that's what I was pointing to earlier by saying that to form the intention to receive everything means you don't favor one kind of receiving over another, as you're pointing to. And that it gets layered, you know. So you said it really well. There's the receiving
the resistance, receiving the resistance to receiving.
Yeah, receiving the resistance to receiving. So receiving the binding, receiving it all. And including, you know, going back to what Carol said, receiving the delusion. You know, just, my shoes are already worn out. But let me just grab them tighter. And then receiving that. And that things will wear away on their own. We're not in charge of that. Including, we have to receive the wish that they wear away, which is normal, but not where we want to focus our energy.
In one of the tellings of Buddha's awakening story, sitting under the Bo tree, when he was assailed by his doubts in the armies of Mara, they say that he didn't fight against things, but he saw into the true nature of Mara and saw that the true nature is simply aliveness. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's the invitation to see, and Lynchy invites us that, to this right view, to seeing into the true nature. We say bad and good, we say plus and minus, but when we're just with it, it's just the aliveness of, I want it to be different, or the grief, or the joy, or the sound of the rain.
I just remembered an expression that I read about Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree and Mara kept appearing. And that what the Buddha would do is say, I see you, Mara.
Right.
Not get away, or I'm going to knock you down. I see you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. I see you.
I see you.
And one of the things we can see is how attached we are to some of the things that are arising, and how much and other things we hate, and, you know, other things we love, and things we hate that we're still attached to. That's the interest. That's more like what Steve was talking about, that I hate this, but, ooh, I don't want to let it go. You know, like the cartoon of the person holding onto the stone. And, you know, my stone, this is my stone, and you know, I love my stone, and then it's taking, the next panel's taking them down to the bottom of the sea, it's drowning them. So sometimes this goes back to the great death. We have to be drowned. We have to go all the way down.
One of the places I get hung up is sort of what Steve is talking about. I mean, receiving suffering, mine or others, and not getting. Finding this fine point between trying to fix it, which is little friend trying to make things right, mm-hmm. and being open to the arising of skillful means that may help. Mm-hmm. That's very hard for me.
Well, I think that's the place of practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to be alive to that, because both are required.
Right.
To say, gee, I'm getting a lot out of your suffering because I'm just being with it, and not helping out is narcissistic. but to try to fix it so I don't have to feel this way. Right. So how do I let myself feel how much I don't want it to be like this? And then, if there's something that can be done, I do it. And they appear as it appears as either or. Right? It appears like, well, I have to figure out. And of course, it's just two approaches to the same situation. You know, the bodhisattva vow is where we can relieve suffering, where we can be of service to each other. We do it.
Right. I think the thing for me is this, you know, the issue of, is it my suffering that I'm trying to relieve, or
right.
yours?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And is what I think needs to happen really?
Yeah.
What's appropriate, what's called?
Yeah. Well, I think that's good to be suspicious.
Right.
And then notice.
As you were speaking, I was remembering that old joke. How many Zen Buddhists does it take to change a light bulb? I'll give you the answer in a minute. But the other day, the bulb went out in the kitchen, and David and Camden changed it. And you know, one option would have been to just stand there and perceive that the light bulb had burned out. And the other option would go get a light bulb and take off the thing and put it on and change it. And there is, I think you're right, it can be very subtle in some circumstances. That circumstance, not so subtle.
Right.
If a light bulb burns out, you change it.
Right.
But even to not know, even if we have this habit pattern of being helpful, which I also know something about for myself, then to pause, to just feel the discomfort of not changing that light bulb, even just for 10 seconds, is profound. And then it starts to apply to many other situations. And so, you know, the answer to the question is it takes two. One to change the light bulb and one not to change the light bulb. And so can we be that one who also doesn't change the light bulb? Can we get to know that part of ourself, that part of the self that doesn't change the light bulb?
So with that light...